love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
All right, we are back with Golden State Hoop, our Valkyries and Warriors podcast. I'm Double G here with Brian, who I think he just blacked out his camera for a second, so I'm sure he will be back. So what are we going to do today? Well, we're going to talk about the Valkyries, who are hot, hot, hot. They're on fire, y'all. We're going to talk about everything that is kind of built up to these last four games of the season. They have a magic number to make the playoffs. I know the Sparks are playing today or tonight, so a loss will be beneficial to the Valkyries. And we are about to kind of settle in with what could be the playoffs scenario here. What happened to you?
I think I'm over electronics.
Can you hear me? Your mic went out?
I tried to be proactive and I restarted my computer last night before I went to bed, hoping I'd get here and it'd be fine, because I didn't think I'd be running late, but I was running late, so that ended up working out. And then I turned on my computer and then it turned off pretty quickly, and I was like, what the heck? And then so I joined the thing, and literally right when you press start, it just turned off. So I'm not sure what's going on with it. The Apple products have been doing me dirty, except for this phone.
Well, you know why? It's because that computer's like 20 years old.
No, the one you gave me is from 2015. That one has been toast for a while, and I've been meaning to take it into the Apple Store. That one had a weird I'm in both streams with my laptop and my computer says it's at 100%. So I'm appalled.
But I can see you. You're fine. You're just not on mic.
Yeah, no, this is my phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your phone's fine.
But my computer just turned back on, and it shows 100%. So I'm at a loss.
I know, I backed your computer out of the picture. So maybe you need to rejoin with your computer if you want to be there. But
I'll do it later.
Yeah, your phone isn't perfect, but it is fine. It's not breaking up or anything.
That's good. So much for the good mic, man. That's what I love having.
All right. So let's talk about, so I was kind of talking to folks about what's going to happen as we talk about the Valkyries. Four games left. We kind of set the table. I mean, unless there's like an epic collapse, they look to be playoff bound. They are actually in the sixth slot as we speak. They beat the Liberty last night. We will also talk about the Warriors, and they're, you know, you would think the NBA, nothing going on. There is actually a little bit going on, and I'll explain, because I've been interested in this Jonathan Kuminga qualifying offer discussion and kind of what it means for the Warriors. And then I will end the show with a discussion about Steph Curry and kind of like his Bay Area legacy. I think there's an argument to be made that he might be the greatest Bay Area athlete of all time. So we'll have that conversation at the end here. So let's go to our Valkyries conversation with some Pod Holla. All right, so you watched the game last night. They took it to the New York Liberty. Now, we'll admit, no Sabrina Ionescu, but the Valkyries were also without Chechi. They were also without Tiffany Hayes, so much so that they signed somebody to a 7-day contract, which we'll talk about in a second. And because Monique Billings was back, they had to let go of Bree Hall. So Bree Hall was back again, and now she's gone. But what'd you think of last night's performance?
I'm glad they got it, because that was, you know, Ohama's previous team, and they had gotten one over the Aces, Natalie's previous team. So I'm glad they got one. You kind of saw, this is the fourth time they played each other, and two out of those three times before last night, they were close games, and they were games. Whereas the first one, it was like their first like away game or something in New York, and they just kind of got blown out of the water. But that I remember, it was a back to back where it was, you know, they played in New York, and then 2 days later they played in New York again against the Liberty. And so I'm glad they got this one, because it kind of felt like they might have had the chance in two of those previous meetups to get it done. And then also New York is just on this weird like kind of downward spiral that I remember that we were talking about it. And I pretty confidently said that I thought New York would retain the 2 seed because the Lynx had ran away with number one. And now here they are at 5. So I think a lot of things was working for the Valkyries. New York kind of looks lifeless a little. They kind of look like they've gotten punched in the face and they haven't been able to really recover. I thought that the Valkyries like were out hustling them for most of the game. Which, yeah, they're at Valhalla, but surely a New York team that just kind of lost badly to Phoenix. I heard that Breonna Stewart was kind of vocal about, like, this can't be how we're playing, and then they come out and do this. I thought that was kind of, like, all signs, like, not good for them. But, hey, I mean, there's four quarters in basketball, but it kind of felt like there was momentum for New York last third quarter, second half of the third quarter, along with the fourth quarter. Kind of neither team's really making shots, but New York kind of had some of those closers to make some shots, whereas the Valkyries has obviously been something that we didn't have, especially with Tip and Xander Lucini on the bench hurt, and of course no Kayla Thornton. But that's always been what they've been searching for, so I'm glad they got it done. But man, that I believe it was 5 minutes in the fourth until that Carla passed to Temi for the wide open layup. It was like a 4 to 5 minute drought of no field goals made. And it kind of was like, we've seen this story before where, you know, even against the Phoenix Mercury, they kind of blew it in the fourth, not able to make shots. So very glad they got that one. I would have thought that the Liberty would have won that game. I'm not entirely shocked that the Valkyries won it, but it's a really good game to get.
The fourth quarter has been their kryptonite. And I think we see why is when you have to run something, which kind of there's a need for a top level scorer, a bucket getter, a clutch scorer. They don't really have that. I guess you would say Janelle Salon is probably best suited for that role. Without Xander Lucini, who would be a nice player to have when the defense, you know, maybe starts overplaying, which we saw at the end there. They were eager to get steals. They were trying to close, you know, they were trying to trap and get some turnovers. And that's why Fagbenle was wide open in the middle for the layup. But without Tip Hayes, you also lose somebody who can get to the basket. And they were specifically guarding against Veronica Burton's drives, and they just made it really hard. Now, in the playoffs, I imagine we're going to see more of that in attacking the Valkyries. But the good thing is the Valkyries themselves, they play such high level defense that they will probably be able to stay in games even if the offense is struggling. But I do think that they need Xander Lucini. I've not heard much about her injury other than that it's a calf injury. I think Salon kind of came out in an interesting part of the game last night where I thought you kind of have to ride her to the end. But the flip side is the Liberty, like they are so tall, they are so long, and they did not take advantage of that at all last night. They were getting out hustled for rebounds. They were getting boxed out. You're seeing little guards flying all over the place and just secure rebounds and taking them away. Like I thought, and it's quite possible that Jonquel Jones has not really been healthy all season long, but I didn't think she looked good. Meisman is very nifty and crafty, especially in that mid range. But on the flip side is when she's got to chase those little guards, you could tell she's not enjoying doing that. And then Breonna Stewart had a bad game for the first half and then kind of came alive mid third and in the fourth. So it was a really strong win, but you kind of see the flaws of the Valkyries that get overcome because they play so darn hard. And I saw this when I went on Saturday last week. The Mystics were terrible. They just didn't have any energy, no fight, and the Valkyries just took advantage of them. The Valkyries, they were 1 point away from getting to 100. Kate was fouled on a three-pointer, and she only made two out of three free throws, so it was a 99-70 win or whatever it was. But they are kind of like Veronica Burton is getting out and running, and I know throughout the season – the Valkyries have been like a really slow team. Like they're very deliberate and they don't get out and run. They shoot a lot of threes, but I've seen of late, it seems like there is at least some intention to get out there and run a little bit more. Cause you see Veronica Burton get that ball and she is racing up the court. They are, you know, smaller than most of these teams. And I think they're trying to use the athleticism over the height to get some easy buckets, but I'm starting to see that, which is awesome. And then we had the return of Monique Billings last night, and she looked great. You know, she did everything that she's been doing. I didn't see that the injury hampered her too much, and really thought that she, you know, it was kind of one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, I remember how she plays and how she helps this team. So what did you think about Billings and also the couple previous games before the New York game?
I thought Billings was fine. I think it kind of is the culture of the Valkyries, given that, you know, every single player on this team is essentially the sixth best player on all the teams. That's why they didn't get, or seventh, that's why they didn't get protected. And, you know, being a role player and being a non-starter, you know, you kind of have to have that stay ready mentality and stay ready approach to the game. So I kind of felt like it was fitting that Monique came back. And although, you know, it's not perfect by any means, but I thought that, you know, just being able to plug and play in such an important game like that is just kind of what the Valkyries culture is. And the previous games, I mean, you got to go to Washington. That was just, they just kicked their butts. And then Indiana, I mean, it's just, it's the home court, baby. It's, they play harder and, you know, no Caitlin, but, you know, still on paper, you talk about Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston probably being the best players on the Valkyries roster. You still think that there's something there, but, you know, they just like, kind of like you said, with having these bigs that can run, you know, I thought that that's kind of what their upper hand was against Las Vegas before they made that pretty dramatic change in their roster. And they've been amazing since, but they were kind of able to just outrun some of those bigger bigs in Kia Stokes and Megan Gustafson. And I thought you can kind of see that maybe a little bit against Indiana. You could see that a little bit against New York, where you have these dynamic bigs that aren't really, I wouldn't say they're like total post threats, but you know, they're valuable in other assets of the game, and mainly speed. I mean, Temi's super athletic. Amihir's super athletic. Monique's super athletic. Repair can shoot. So, you know, that makes up for maybe some of the speed that she lacks in comparison to the other bigs on the roster. But, I mean, I don't think Amihir got tick last night, did she?
I don't remember her playing at all, actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, not to jump topics here, and it doesn't matter because Elizabeth Kitley, who they just signed, is probably not going to see the floor. She's just there until one of the players gets healthy, but I thought it was interesting.
Do you have an idea why they added a center instead of another
wing? I was just about to bring up. It's because, you know, you talk about Monique coming back and then Amihir not seeing the floor. Why would you bring in a 6'6 center? I guess the only argument is that they haven't had anything above 6'4 on this roster. Even if people remember Kiara Linskins from not too long ago, she was only 6'4, but she looked kind of like 6'5, but she was only like 6'4. Kitley's 6'6. So I guess, you know, they haven't had someone that tall on the roster all season. So maybe that's just a different look. But again, I don't think she sees the floor. So I was almost wondering, like, why not just be like, hey, Bree, you know, sorry, but like, you think you could turn your flight around?
Well, if they had thought that Bree was going to be the play, then they would have just waited, or they would have made it seamless that, okay, she's, you know, we're going to lose this person, but this person's coming back. So we'll just make it all happen on the same day. And so that was kind of a sign that wasn't going to happen. But yeah, I mean, it was a surprise, but they don't have a true like center. And I was thinking, I'm like, who do they play in the next four games where they may need to show, you know, a shot blocker or something. And so the next four games, we have Dallas and Minnesota at home. And then they go on the road for Seattle and then Minnesota to end the season. Who would they, what would necessitate them needing a super big in those four games?
I guess just Malanga. I don't know if she's healthy, but she is the 6'6". But the thing is, they've never had problems with Malanga. They actually usually make Malanga look bad. But I guess Malanga has kind of turned it around. She's played well. Second, like this back half of the, you know, maybe a little after All-Star break, she started to figure it out. But no, it doesn't, you know, Minnesota kind of plays. Minnesota's bigger, like kind of like a New York, but they've got some mobility in their bigs, you know, given Collier and Alana Smith and Jessica Shepherd. Like those are all bigs that can move. So, you know, I don't know. It's Kate's friend. You know, they both got drafted in the same draft in Las Vegas. And a friend pointed something out to me that, you know, Vegas. So Kitley was under Natalie Nicasse as an assistant coach. So maybe she'll be able to kind of pick things up on the fly. But I just don't even see a potential for playing in any meaningful minutes. So I don't even know if it's worth discussing that much just because we have four games left. The only benefit, I guess, not the only, but one of the benefits is that, you know, I don't think the Valkyries have any rest type of mentality in them where Natalie would just say, all right, everyone rest. We're going to trick away this game because we clinched the playoffs. Like, I think they're still going to play every game to the fullest because they're still potential between 6 and 8 and even them missing the playoffs entirely still. But I mean, if there is blowouts or, you know, either way, that's Kitley minutes. But yeah, I guess the very slight potential that they somehow are able to clinch the playoffs and they actually don't really care who their opponent is. Maybe it's like, okay, Temi, you know, you've played a lot, you know, let's get some rest to gear you up for the playoffs. But I just don't even see that being what their kind of mentality has been this season. I don't know if I could see that.
All right, so just want to shout this out to folks. We have opened up the Discord in a soft launch kind of way, and if you are interested in discussing some Valkyries, if you're interested in discussing Warriors, we will also have channels for all of the sports that we cover and all of the teams that we cover. So 49ers, Giants, there are some Bay Area. If you are a Bay Area sports fanatic, like if you like the Bay FC team, if you like the Oakland Roots, the Oakland Soul, We have channels there, and you may be able to find some like-minded fans in the Discord. Basically, gg@bspnmedia.com. We're going to allow folks who listen to our shows, who watch our shows on YouTube. We're going to allow folks just to come in. We've got a lot of stuff created, and there's a lot of empty space for people to kind of figure out what they want to do and how they want to communicate with other folks. So I think we will have some conversation around the 49ers this weekend, because opening weekend in the NFL, and there will be lots of chats around just different sports. Giants are hot right now. They're pretending like they're in the playoffs when they're kind of probably not, but and then all, of course, Valkyries and upcoming Warrior stuff. So soft launch the Discord. We had a Discord with BSPN before. It was just kind of not happening, and we decided to rebrand under the Golden State Hoops banner, especially because, I mean, the Valkyrie stuff has been tremendous on our channel. So we want to support, we want to create a safe space, a fun space for people to be able to talk Valkyries. Brian was in there today. I was in there today. We had a couple of other people join Valkyries fanatics. We had Jonathan Gonzalez, the other Jonathan Gonzalez, not my son, Jonathan Gonzalez, and Chris O joined us in the Discord. So shout out to all of them. All right, so you're back, and it looks like you got a mic.
How does it sound?
Yeah, you sound better.
Okay, I hope it sticks. But I did realize that now that I left the broadcast with my phone, it's currently uploading, so you'll have two different versions of me to have to edit.
No, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how much I want to do that. I may just keep the stream version.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's actually try and figure out this playoff scenario here. So this is not counting any of the games that are going on right now, and I don't have any of the box scores in front of me, but this would have been at the end of last night. The Valkyries sit sixth at 22-18. So they are guaranteed to have at least a 500 record. The teams ahead of them, New York Liberty, who they just beat, they're up a game and a half on the Valkyries. Phoenix Mercury are four games above the Valkyries, kind of out of touch there. So, you know, they will be locked into one of those top five spots. Atlanta Dream, same thing. They have the same record. The Vegas Aces, same thing, same record. All three of those teams have the exact same record at 26-14, fighting for that number two spot. And of course, the Lynx, who may go through this entire season with single digit losses. So do you think the Valkyries are actually going to be able to hang on to this sixth slot? The Storm are right behind them, but they are a full game back and two games worse than the loss column. They only have two more games left for the season, while the Valkyries have four. What would you, if you were to predict where they end next Thursday when the season ends, where do you think the Valkyries sit?
I'm probably going seven, as my, you know, as my floor. Seems like five is still a ceiling, but I think six is realistic. But I also think, you know, Seattle's going to be fighting like hell against the Valkyries, and I think they are in Seattle, so that there's a little bit of control of destiny there. Whereas I think Seattle can clinch the tiebreaker because they've, or actually, have we beat? I think we've beaten them twice, and they might have beaten us once. So it would be a tie, and then I kind of forget the next tiebreaker there. But you know, Seattle's fighting to stay in the playoffs, so I can imagine that's going to be like a crazy game. But you know, the Valkyries have Dallas next. I feel like that's, you know, I'm not going to write in any game as a W, but at home, I just got word no Haley Jones, so. I think I like the Valkyries' chances tomorrow.
Valkyries have won both games against the Storm so far, by the way.
I think there's been three. They lost right before the All-Star break.
To the Storm?
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that Google Gems is wrong? No, you're right. You're right.
I don't need AI. I am AI.
they had the correct series, but then when they listed the results, they only listed the results of the two Valkyries wins. So that's what.
So it looks like they have. They have New York. Oh my goodness! They have New York and Golden State. Golden State's their season finale.
Now I think that's next Tuesday. I think.
Imagine if they lose. I mean, it's probably likely, but imagine if they lose to New York. And I don't know what the Sparks schedule looks like for the rest of it, but this just that has all the tellings of a game that Seattle is going to go like all in for to try and fight for their chances to make the playoffs. But they have the tiebreakers over Indiana and LA. So to me, like, seven is the lowest they can go. Of course, there's opportunity for them to still slide out because they haven't clinched it yet, but mm-hmm. just feels like, you know, they've done the work ahead of time to secure those tiebreakers against LA and Indiana. I would be surprised if that did not happen.
Who do you want to play in the first round?
Oh my goodness.
Of the WNBA playoffs?
So we would be playing Atlanta right now.
But 2 through 4, they're all kind of jumbled.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it. Like, I don't want to see Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's a tough
one. Don't want to see Las Vegas. I really don't want to see Minnesota, of course. We haven't beaten Phoenix
or Atlanta.
Still haven't beaten Phoenix.
I think I'd rather see Atlanta.
Because we've beaten them and we came close, you know, one other time. What I think was close, I always talk about this game. I thought that there was a few things that could have changed and they would have won that first game against Atlanta. But they won the second game against them. That was the green apparatus game. And then Atlanta kind of took it to them at home a little bit there. But yeah, Atlanta or Phoenix. I don't know. To me, though, when they've played Phoenix, they've been relatively tight games, you know, barring the first one. Even the first one was kind of down the stretch. I remember it was two Steph Talbot, terrible sideline out of bounds turnovers. Yeah. That was like a Xander Lissini game, too, where she kind of was breaking out a little, and then she went to Eurobasket. But that second game, you know, that was the Janelle Salon, two clutch shots, free throws to end it. The third game is the one they kind of blew at the end, but, you know, you can argue. I think they were missing a decent chunk of players. And then, of course, on this last one where they were in Phoenix about a week ago or two, you know, like Tiff gets hurt in the middle of the game. And, you know, it was just like it was not good. So, you know, that's the argument right there. It's would you rather see Phoenix or Atlanta? And I don't know if you say any of those two confidently, but to me, I don't think there's an obvious answer.
Who can you get? Who do you think? Because okay, so it's going to be 1-1-1.
Yep,
they're going to get one at home. They have Bahala. It was rocking, by the way, on Saturday. Like, I was just so impressed because it's like Saturday night. Like, Washington was not playing well; they're out of it, and yet still just on fire. Though the Indiana game, the poor fans had to sit through all those delays because of the clock situation. And so that wasn't great, but yeah, I was just so impressed by it. There is a home court advantage, and I guess it's more so, what team do you think that they would play best at home, just to steal that, to force a game three?
You know, just made me think of this. I think in Thor Ragnarok, the third movie, they come mm-hmm. to the conclusion that Asgard is not a place, it's a people. And you know how there's some ties with the Valkyries and in the Norse mythology. Is Valhalla is Valhalla a place or a people? Because they will not be in Valhalla if they play a playoff game. They will be at Oracle or SAP Center.
We had a note in the Discord from Chris O, who said that Temi. I haven't verified this, so we're trusting Chris here. Temi said that something about not cheering for the opposing team, and she said they should come into Valhalla feeling unwelcome. So Temi knows.
Oh my goodness.
Temi was on a playoff team last year. She knows that it's going to get no more Mr. Nice Ball Hollow or Mrs. Nice Ball Hollow come playoff time. They're going to need to be that. If there's one crowd that can kind of sway a game, it might be Ball Hollow.
And we'll see where they play.
All right. So last four games of the season, we will probably record next week, probably this same time if we can, which would mean right before the season ender against Minnesota. I'm going to assume that everything will be tied up on the Valkyries end by then. I don't think we will be relying on that last game. I mean, it's kind of crazy, the schedule, that you got to play the best team in a league twice in your last four games to close it out.
When have they clinched one? Have they clinched one yet?
Absolutely.
Oh, they have?
Yeah. They have 8 losses, and the number 2 team has 14 losses. So there's
We'll see if they kind of take their foot off
maybe,
the pedal.
Maybe the last game of the season is at home for them. So who knows if they're going to want to tank that home game away.
That's true. You don't want to go into the playoffs of like a, you know, total upset, not upset, but just big loss.
And I guess we should shout out this person because when you were gone, Conrado and I had a conversation it was the last show that you were on. We talked about Kate and how we love Kate, but as a player, because of her notoriety and her celebrity of being on that Iowa team, she kind of came into Golden State as like a very well-known player, and her celebrity kind of probably exceeds her actual basketball ability. But she's been shooting the basketball, man. She's doing the Steph thing too, where she's getting all these 3 free throw with the getting fouled on the 3-pointer. And I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, is she figuring out this, or are they just, you know, kind of sloppy on the defense? Why would you try and block 3-pointers, by the way? It rarely happens, but she seems to have a knack for drawing that foul in the way that she does. And she absolutely has picked up her game since we had that conversation.
And I've felt that she hasn't been as much of, I get the ball, I have to absolutely shoot it right now, there's no other play. Like, she's not a natural playmaker by any means. I think she's like a limited playmaker, but there are some, like, she's kind of gets the ball and almost like fake passes, like a slight like fake pass, and then it's kind of like, okay, whoever I'm passing it to, Ileana or even Veronica, back cut, boom, bounce pass right into the paint. There's been a few of those that, you know, as long as just not, I haven't felt as much of, you know, that game where I was like kind of okay with, but I think people didn't love that, like 4 for 17 or whatever the hell that was. Like it was a lot of like just huck and chuck, like, but and to her credit, like there was kind of no one available. She kind of had to do a lot of that, but I felt like it's been maybe a little more controlled. And I felt like with those 3-pointers, those and ones, I think Carlo is getting a little like, what the hell? That's my move. And so she just completely like got one last night at the end of the game. That was honestly an offensive foul. I'm surprised that, I don't know if New York had a challenge or not, or they weren't more upset about that, because I think Carlo completely kicked out her leg.
Yeah. And I haven't seen Kate do the kick out, but she definitely steps into her threes. So as she's up in the air and shooting them, she definitely falls forward. So I wonder if she's creating, or she's kind of cutting down her own airspace in a way. But
Kate has a good percentage to kind of back up like the hard contest, whereas Carla's have been more self-creation threes. It hasn't been more like swing, swing, swing three. It's been like step backs that have kind of been getting people lately. And I'm like, what? Let her have it. But
yeah,
she has kind of hit some tough ones.
All right, that is it for Pod Hollow here.
Wait, what we should say is, are we going to game 2?
You're the one who was saying that it was getting too expensive.
But I kind of feel like we have to.
Well, we'll have to figure out what day. Did we already figure out what day it was going to be?
We did. It's you know what? I think there's still I think there's game 2 is either on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
Is it next? No, I think it'd be the following. I think it's the
following. Not next week. Has to be the following.
It's like the following Tuesday or Wednesday. There's 2 game 2s on Tuesday, 2 game 2s on Wednesday. So I think we just have to wait until the seedings finalize.
I mean, those seats are going to sell out like almost immediately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have to strategize there. Okay, that's it for the Valhalla segment. We'll be back. Talking Valkyries next week. But let's pivot to our segment on the Warriors for the death lineup.
Warriors.
All right, Jonathan Kuminga. The last couple times we've been like, "Why are we still talking about this guy?" I only want to say one thing, which is, so I was kind of just trying to figure out the whole qualifying offer thing, because that seems like it's the bigger play for him, and what people think he's actually going to do is take that qualifying offer. Okay, so Sam Gordon from the Chronicle had a column, and I just wanted to kind of read from his piece just so everyone is aware of how Kuminga plays this. So for the Warriors, the negative thing about Kuminga accepting the qualifying offer is that, for one, that slot is cheap. So I think it's like 1 year, $7 million or something. So from a trade aspect, the Warriors would not have a high trade opportunity with his salary, with the way that NBA trades work. So Sam writes, extending Kuminga with a multi-year deal worth more than $20 million annually would give the Warriors optionality in trades if the partnership sputters this season. They would preserve the salary slot and with it, the chance to aggregate his contract with other contracts in a deal. That is, unless he signs the qualifying offer. Signing the tender would grant Kuminga an implied no-trade clause in 2025-26 and veto power in a potential trade. Yes, the Warriors could trade him in theory should he part with his vetoing rights, but the receiving team would lose his bird rights that grant the option to re-sign Kuminga while exceeding salary cap. Therefore, acceptance of the qualifying offer would compromise Kuminga's trade value this season while all but guaranteeing he signs elsewhere. So reading that, I much more understand the standoff, because the Warriors are trying to play hardball by saying, we're going to offer you a 2-year deal. You're going to make a lot more money, but we want the option on that second year. We don't want you to be able to get out of that unless we want you to get out of that. And so that seems to be the thing that is holding him back from signing the deal with the Warriors. And I kind of wonder if it's going to be a who blinks first kind of thing right up into the deadline, because for the Warriors, it is so much better if he signs, because his trade value will be so much higher than if he signs a qualifying offer. So that is where it stands. And I'm just assuming that we are going to see this standoff all the way until whenever that deadline is.
I also read that he has vetoing power over any trade if he signs the qualifying offer.
Right. Sure, that's what was in the Gordon piece, was the vetoing thing. So even, and then let's say that he forgoes that veto, the team that trades for him automatically loses his bird rights, which would not be great for them. So he would basically be seemingly untradeable this year. They would have him for the year, then he would be a free agent, and you lose him and he's gone. That is the scenario that it seems that he is using as his leverage for the Warriors to do whatever that they're going to do. So
is there any compromise? Because he's like, you know, I want player option. Warriors say, no, we're doing team option. Could the compromise be no option? Or is no option worse than team option? I'd assume team option's the worst for him.
So like compromise, just an overall no 2-year deal?
2 years.
I mean, yeah, and then the handshake thing of like, look, dude, after either this year or next year, we're going to try very hard to work with you and get you somewhere where you want to be.
Yeah, but he's probably not like down for any type of handshake with the Warriors. He probably feels like so burned. Like, I think I read like he didn't want to be a pawn in, you know, a situation where he already feels like the scapegoat or something, or something along those lines. And I'm like, I get it.
But if you think about it, the reason why the Warriors want that trade option or that team option is because that also gives the other team who they may trade him to
that
some
team
security.
Option.
So they would own the team option.
Yeah, of course. I think every team would want
you higher.
Every team would want team option over player option. Players would always want player option over team option.
Yeah, because he's going to opt out no matter what.
No.
Then he would opt in.
Yeah, if he gets hurt, he'd opt in. I think there are like situations. I tried to read a couple articles because I wasn't sure how in-depth we were going about this, but I think there's like the obvious Nerlens Noel example where he kind of did the bet on himself thing and then turned down $70 million offer, gets hurt, and then signs like for $2 million or a veteran minimum for OKC the next year. Like that's probably something he goes to bed every night thinking about
the rest of his career. Nerlens Noel, I think he made $25 million over the rest of his career. But yeah, so that is a loss of, you know, almost $50 million, $45 million. So
I think there's a Ben Gordon, Greg Monroe flip side of the argument where they are able to do what Kuminga wants to do. Make the money.
So basically my opinion is this thing's not going to, there's not going to be an answer anytime soon. We're going to the deadline, people.
All right. Can the Warriors do a, is there a JK Zero LLC that the Warriors can funnel money into?
Steve Ballmer-esque kind of move here.
That's relevant basketball news. Why wouldn't we talk about that?
I just don't understand it, which is the big thing. I saw Steve Ballmer's, he was saying that it was an actual company that they invested in that went bankrupt and that or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's all probably shady stuff. And
I mean, this is what Bill Simmons always says is done. Like he would always say, like, you know, Dirk in the end of Dirk's career, it's like, okay, yeah, he's signing for less money because, you know, he's going to have a piece of the team or whatever. This was when Cuban had the team. And there's always like conversation about that. But yeah, I want to read like Pablo. I haven't heard Pablo Torre's podcast on it, actually. So I want to hear that. But I can't wait for all the pieces that are going to come out.
I really hope Bill has him on.
Pablo Torre?
Second time in 2 months or something.
Yeah, yeah, he should. He definitely should.
That would, it completely fits with, like, you know, Bill being a season ticket holder for the Clippers if he still is, and, you know, this story in hoop. Like, it would be a great conversation. I really hope they do it.
All right, did you see Draymond training with Jimmy Butler?
I saw him airballing. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
He did like open runs, pro runs with like Moses Moody, I think Jalen Johnson, DeAndre Jordan, DeMar DeRozan. And there's a clip where he's posting up Moses and he takes some fadeaway shot and he calls foul and Moses is like, what the hell? Like, Moses is like, that's not your game. Like, he's trash talking, like, that's not your game. And then the foul stands, because of course when you're playing pickup, like, you just got to respect the call most of the time.
Yeah.
And then the people are egging it on. They're like, back to Draymond, you know, back to Draymond to post up Moses. Draymond does one of those terrible looking fadeaways, airball.
in this I guess it was a video or something, he said they're winning the championship. He called it. I looked at the odds.
They're probably not looking. They're probably what, top 10?
Okay, so what would you guess?
I would guess 7 to 10.
Okay, yes. They are in that mix. What is surprising to me is that the Lakers actually have better odds than the Warriors right now. So number one, obviously, Oklahoma City. Number two is Cleveland. Cleveland and actually the Knicks, they're around tied because, you know, we're just using like an accumulation of all the different odds. So
Cleveland, I get that there needs to be an East team, but I would almost feel better about like Denver, number two.
Denver's Houston, four. Houston is five. Lakers are six at between plus 1,500 and plus 1,800. Then Minnesota, then the Clippers, and then the Warriors after the Clippers. And then after the Warriors, it's the Mavericks, the Sixers, and then the Celtics.
Yeah, Lakers are two. I'm surprised the Lakers are over the Clippers. But I guess, you know, the rationality is like, oh, they could do another big trade. They're the Lakers.
And they have two really famous players on their team, and people like to bet on famous players. So the Warriors are not even really in the top mix. So for Draymond to say that, he feels really good for one, which I think is good for him because, you know, there's a lot of wear and tear on that body. And Conrado and I talked about this last week about Al Horford. And if you do bring in Horford, then maybe it alleviates Draymond having to play so much five, which will be helpful. And so maybe he's looking at it like, you know, I feel good. We're actually adding some players that I think can help us. We have this like 2-year window. Steph and Jimmy are still playing at a high level. I would like someone to ask him, like, what are the reasons why he thinks this? But hey, this is why Draymond is Draymond, right? He's got so much confidence in himself. And you know what's funny is so there's a docuseries on the championship team, the first Steph championship team. And so I don't know when these interviews were filmed. It looks like semi-recent. Like David Lee is in there and Bob Myers is in there. Joe,
what does Steph's hair look like? That's usually like the indicator.
I haven't seen Steph yet, so I don't know if Steph, but Andre is in there. Glasses Andre is in there.
No, this is recent. No,
so it has to be kind of recent. And they go back to, or Andre is talking about that team, the 2014-2015 team. And he basically says, you know, we kind of knew that Steph was going to have this insane season, and probably the rest of the league didn't know it. And we knew Clay was ready to kind of go up that next level, and the rest of the league didn't. And then he said, because remember, Draymond wasn't even a starter yet. He didn't start until David Lee got hurt. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and we kind of knew Draymond was going to be a really good player, and nobody really knew yet. And so it's kind of cool to see like babyface chubby Draymond after he gets drafted and kind of, betting on himself, explaining why he thinks that the Warriors are kind of on the ascent, you know, that we just got a great draft class, the Harrison Barnes, Azili and Draymond draft class. And so it was kind of cool. So if you're on, you know, YouTube, just go to the Warriors page. I think there are 4 episodes. I watched like half the first one. It's really fun. That team is just like, what better team to think about than that team, you know, in Bay Area sports, really. But hey, Draymond's been doing this for his entire career, so as long as he can promise me that he's not getting kicked out of 5 games and he's going to be there when they need him, I'm good. Okay, let's end the show with this. I asked you to come up with your Mount Rushmore of Bay Area athletes who you have seen throughout your lifetime, and I asked my dad, and I came up with mine as well, because I wanted to see how much crossover there would be on all three Mount Rushmore. So for context, my dad probably starts watching sports in the early to mid 60s. So you're talking about, you know, gosh, how long ago is that? Like 60 years ago about. And then I would have started watching sports, at least as far as my recollection, like what I can remember, around 1983, like for all three, Niners, Giants, and Warriors, I can remember things happening from 1983. So that is 42 years ago. And then you're probably what? Like what time frame do you think that you remember sports and athletes and stuff?
That's a great question. Because I was thinking about that as you were saying that, and I guess my earliest memories are probably like 49ers, but even that, I think we're in like 2007 or 8 by now. Mm-hmm. Like, how old were you when you said your year?
I would have been 7, maybe.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm throwing myself as, like 8, 9.
Okay, so now I'll give out my dad's Mount Rushmore. Now, we went back and forth because he kept wanting to put on like his favorites. And I was like, no, you're a Bay Area historian. Like, John Brody should not be on this team. Like, John Brody was great, but he's not better than Joe Montana. So we were kind of going through that. But he came up with his list of Willie Mays, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, and Steph. So
he's got to see it all, man.
He's got to see it all. And you know who he wanted to put in there was Rick Barry, who got the 74 or 75 championship, because that was his favorite player growing up. And so, you know, you talk about Mays and Steph in the same sentence. Like, that is kind of crazy to think about. But Willie Mays is, a lot of people say he's the greatest baseball player of all time. I don't think people call Steph the greatest basketball player of all time, but then Steph has the rings that Willie didn't have as a player, at least in San Francisco. He did have one from New York. And so then when I thought about it, I said, okay, mine is...
You have like two or three obvious ones.
Mine is Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
Mine is also Joe Montana. Mine is also Jerry Rice.
And Steph.
And then Steph. So yeah. Steph crosses over both of our times. And the Joe Montana and Jerry Rice don't work for you because they had retired before. Jerry was still playing when you were born, but he was, you know, in playing for the Raiders and stuff.
I don't even remember Barry. So,
and yeah, you would have seen games of Barry's like
last like 05
seasons, like 06, 07. You would have been back then Pac Bell Park to see Barry. But yeah, he is also not of your lifetime of watching sports. So now give me your four that you gave me earlier.
I think my fourth spot is still like in discussion because I'll start saying it. So it's Steph. If I had to rank them even, I'd probably go Steph, Buster, Draymond, and KD. And so that KD spot for me is the one that could be changed, but it's just like, damn, he was just, you know, the first or second most important player for two championships.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking.
Well, the thing that there's no Niners on your list, which, I mean, I wouldn't even be sure who to put. So
Yeah, I had some names, but my rationale is in my lifetime, I have seen three San Francisco Giants World Series,
mm-hmm.
four Golden State Warriors finals wins,
mm-hmm.
and three losses at the Super Bowl for San Francisco 49ers. So to be fair, I'm only picking winners. But I was tossing between Frank Gore, Vernon Davis, and then I was like, I'm not picking Joe Staley. Like, you know, I mean, not freaking
Fred Warner is kind of the current guy.
Fred Warner
is the current guy, but you're right. You're going to lean on Warriors and Giants because those were the teams that won the titles.
Willis.
Whereas I was growing up, the Niners won all the titles and then the Giants and the Warriors weren't until now. So I had to kind of cross pollinate with my eras to get what I got.
But I was also thinking Lincecum and Bumgarner. But I think when I was kind of like have way more baseball memories, I think Lincecum was kind of not as dominant.
Well, your brother would pick Lincecum for sure.
Yeah, he would. But that's completely biased. I don't know if that's factual.
He had three rings, though. You know, he was really only
dominant for one.
He was the biggest part of the one, and then he helped out in the second. But yeah, by the third, I don't even think he was on the playoff roster. So, yeah. No, but it was a really interesting thought process because what I was, and this is like, you know, some you have a hypothesis, and I was like, I wonder, is Steph Curry the greatest Bay Area sports athlete? But
I don't think the crossover can completely confirm that because had I been alive, like, I think do like the four greatest, like you'd probably go. Well, I mean,
it's probably what your grandpa's list was.
It's Willie, Jerry, Joe, and Steph.
That's probably overall. If we were to like really do some polling, I would imagine that's what it is. Barry would be on the next four for sure, but I don't think you would put Barry over Willie necessarily because
I mean, even over like Jerry or Joe or
those guys had four Super Bowl championships. Yeah. And Barry didn't have any titles. But no, it was just a fun thing because what I wanted to figure out is where does Steph rank in the Pantheon? And I think he's right there with the most important Bay Area athletes ever. And that tells you a lot about his career and what he really means and why, I mean, this dude is royalty out here because of that. I forgot to even change it to the Warriors background.
I also think it's cool that most of those guys, if not all, are homegrown. I know Willie started in Brooklyn, but you can't do anything about that when they moved to San Francisco. Steph drafted. Was Jerry and Joe drafted too, or were they early?
Jerry and Joe were drafted by the 49ers, yeah.
Like, if you know, if you talk about, like, L.A. sports, I wonder how many of those are homegrown. And not to – or New York, I'm not, but I just think that's cool about the Bays.
Yeah, and, you know, you on your list was also Buster. And
homegrown, Draymond homegrown.
Buster kind of continues to live on based off of what he's doing with the Giants right now.
I think we all hope that Steph kind of takes some similar path. Steph's such a business person that I don't think he'll ever take the Buster role for the Warriors, but you just hope he's always, like, around.
Yeah, totally. All right. So I think we're going to try and come back middle of next week as the Valkyries wrap up their regular season, and we can kind of figure out what we want to do around the playoffs, because this has been a great season. It's been so much fun. I almost feel sad a little bit that we're getting to the end of it, because I know 44 games is a lot. We've seen 40. We've watched every single one of them, and it just feels like it kind of went so fast. But yeah. I think, you know, if you think about it, they might be playing their best basketball of the season. Depending that when the Eurobasket was happening, they reeled off some really great wins too. But I don't know. I think it's the Veronica Burton thing where she's just kind of you could tell there's a confidence with her in running this ball club. She's like, this is my team and we're going. So
I feel like there's a really good shot. She plays. I mean, I almost think that it's up to her right now if she wants to play an unrivaled or not. I haven't heard any reports, but at least after this season, you can still watch some Valkyries and unrivaled, since it's more accessible for the American audience.
Yeah, that would be fun. All right. That is it from here. So we'll be back next week. For Bri, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.